This is Michael Fratantuono, Professor of International Business and Management and International Studies. I'm in Beijing, China. At which restaurant are we at?
No idea.
Was it Sherway? Sherway Sher?
Okay, Sherway Sher restaurant. Talking with two of my former students, Andy Keller and Peter Wing. Both graduated in 2006 as IB&M majors. Both are now residents of Beijing. And I'm interviewing Andrew and Peter for Dickinson Magazine, which is publishing a special issue in this spring on Dickinson connections to China.
It's kind of cool to be able to go in and talk to this factory manager on your own. And I find myself in there just thinking, I'm like, here I am interviewing this guy speaking Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to, you know, my first day of Chinese class back freshman year at Dickinson. How the hell did I get here?
How did you do this?
My point is knowing Chinese here, even if your job doesn't necessarily require it, is definitely a huge, huge advantage.
In terms of social life, do you hang out with expats, or do you hang out with Chinese folks, or do you just hang out with each other, or how, you know, what?
It's mostly expats now.
I think we see that as kind of an unfortunate part of our existence that we're here, but basically living American lives. We hang out with Americans and Canadians and the occasional Englishmen.
Do you live in an apartment building that is primarily expats, or?
We all live in an area that is, I mean, no place is predominantly expats. There's too many Chinese people. We all live close to, it's near the downtown Beijing, near all the offices and a few schools, so there is a high population of expats, so we end up hanging out with them a lot. That probably wasn't always the case. I think when we first got here as students, we were really into studying the language and experiencing China, and I think we did a pretty good job of hanging out with a lot of Chinese people, or speaking a lot of Chinese. We lived with families, so we go to their family functions or something like that. But now that we've kind of lived through all that, I guess we've resorted back to seeking a more American lifestyle.
It's really a cultural thing. I mean, it's just two different cultures.
Chinese people don't want to go out to the bar on Saturday night. They want to go out and have a huge dinner and then go to bed at 9 o'clock.
I just feel like when we were here last studying abroad,
and that was in
2004 and 2005. You know, that's not long ago at all. But we would be the center of attention just walking down the street sometimes, even in Beijing, definitely outside of Beijing. No one cares anymore. Like even the migrant,
don't care about
even
us.
The migrant workers. You know, they're from the countryside and everything, but no one really stares now.
That was the biggest difference I noticed between when we were studying here and getting back after graduation.
It's only 3 years.
It's only, less than that. A year and a half. And we used to get on the buses and everyone would go, "Mom, look, foreigner.
Oh, really?
And now it's just, whatever, there's a foreign guy. Or not even, there's a guy.
Do you think you're going to be here in China for the long haul, or do you think you're going to get burned out?
Question of the day.
You don't know yet.
Yeah, it's day by day at this point. I think wherever there are the interesting job opportunities, I do see myself like raising my family in America. But as long as I'm loving it here, I think I want to be here because I'm going to have a much more valuable and unique experience here than I will back in the States.
I
find it really interesting, just the difference in generations. Like I went home for Christmas and was in this really special situation by Chinese standards, where I had my generation, my parents' generation, their parents' generation, and their parents' generation all under one roof. So
your great grandparents were?
My great grandmother.
Wow.
And it was interesting to see different generations react to the fact that I'm living in China. And, you know, my great-grandmother can't get over it, sees no reason why I would ever be out of America. My grandmother is a little bit more accepting, and my parents are very encouraging of what I'm doing, but it was not something they would have considered, you know, coming out of college, and now we're living in this really global world where you can really pack your bags after school and go anywhere in the world. When I was applying to jobs, I was applying to jobs in New York, I was looking into jobs in Dubai. Pete applied to a job in Dubai.
Uh-huh.
Applying to jobs in Beijing, Shanghai, like go to New Zealand, Australia, Japan,
wherever.
So would you say in a more general sense that, I mean, you chose Dickinson, I would guess, for a reason, and it was that global aspect to it. And if you were thinking of Dubai, where you don't have particularly, if you don't have language skills.
Nothing.
You have nothing.
It's probably stupid.
No, but I mean, I was going to try to paint it in a positive way that the fact that you did come to China during undergraduate and get exposure here and do it here probably gives you the self-confidence and the sense I can do that.
I'm glad I'm in China and not Dubai. I mean, that's...
But the fact is that, you know, going back to what does a Dickinson education provide that way? And
confidence, yeah.
It gives you the confidence to go anywhere you want in the world. If I had gone to Penn State or any other school that didn't get me into a studying abroad mindset where study abroad rate wasn't 60 or 80% or whatever it is, coming out of there, I wouldn't have been thinking about going to another country to live and work for a while, and B, would have been kind of frightened of the prospect.
Do you have any interaction with the current Dickinson students?
We hang out with them every once in a while.
Do you?
Yeah. When they first got here, Dickinson has an on-site director named Gawasher, and we're still very close to her. We saw her a couple days ago.
She was your on-site director, too?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she's a great woman. I'll just give her that plug right now. But, through her, we're able to keep in close contact with how the current Dickinson kids are doing. She invites us out to dinner with them every once in a while, so we all get their phone numbers and Facebook profiles, so we're able to, organize some every once in a while to get together.
Do they look up to you as, people who have gone through what they've gone through, and you have made it now, and you're young professionals in Beijing?
I think so. They probably shouldn't, but...
You're really cult heroes, and you don't even quite know it,
Yeah.
What is the hardest part about being here? Or?
The hardest part is just not having grown up here, I think. There's, you could be fluent at this language and still not really have a good idea of what's going on.
Uh-huh.
People will cut you in the subway line. People will... Different standards of politeness at certain points. Spitting.
Because you're gaijin. So is that the right word? How do you say it? Gaijin?
Ganjing. Ganjing. Clean. I think for me the hardest part is, especially in the fall, is no football. So I miss sports, actually. I can't turn on the TV and watch a baseball or football game.
When you see other young expats, have they had similar experiences undergraduate as you have had? That is, that they managed to come here and...
It's actually a funny story. We had, when we were studying at Beijing University with Dickinson, we made a bunch of friends with other Americans who were also studying at that university, different schools. And Annie and I get back to Beijing after graduating. And we all of a sudden start... we knew maybe one other kid was coming back, two other kids who we were friends with were coming back. And all of a sudden they came back, and they knew a bunch of other kids that we knew that were coming back. And there was just this big group of us who had been a group of friends before during our junior year. Kind of lost touch with them.
Just be walking down the street and be like, I know you.
Together. Yeah, we ran into the kid at the restaurant.
In the middle of a city of 17 million people, huh?
It's amazing. I think there's a huge draw for people who are interested in studying, not just studying Chinese, but they want to be here. They just love the excitement of the change and the opportunity that exists here.
Well, when you do the Beijing program, what's it like there?
It's every class you take is a Chinese language class, focusing on a different aspect of the language. And your professors...
About 18 hours a week of class time, or 20 hours a week?
20 hours.
More than Dickinson. Then you have the option of living with a family, which is really what puts you over the top. I lived in a dorm the first semester.
Uh-huh.
Didn't really get... I mean, I got a good foundation under me, but I moved in with a family the second semester, and it just... I started, you know, understand. I could listen to everything, and it all made sense. Speaking just came a lot more fluid. You're just... It's all Chinese all the time, and that's what it takes.
The sky had a wonderful hue today, and the drive in from the airport, it's just this constant gray.
It was interesting. I imagine you've heard of the blue sky days,
the benchmark,
the nomenclature they've come up with. They've got this scale from 0 to 500, with 500 being the most polluted and 0 being the least. And, I think 100 is the cutoff for what's safe that they've decided athletes can compete in for the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
150, however, is when the U.S. and Europe start warning citizens that it's bad outside.
And oh, my goodness.
We spend most of our time here somewhere in the middle, around 200 to 300, and 500 is not the most polluted it gets here, and there were like 12 or 13 days this year that were over, that's where they stopped, the instruments stopped measuring it, but the average for the year was about 106, which is better than last year's 111, but worse than the previous.
Summer's worse, isn't it? Isn't the summer worse? Or not?
Yeah.
I've gone back and forth on when's the worst. It's whenever the wind's blowing, you're in good shape.
The winter, I think, is probably the worst because... And I don't know why I never noticed this before. I never got to see this before, but I went on a business trip to a place in the Hebei province called Handan. And took the train in between there, and just coming back and watching these little villages go by, little towns, and seeing just smoke, this yellow, gray, sulfuric, dirty coal smoke coming out of each and every house in the town, and just laying this blanket of disgusting air over each town. It was really incredible. And 60% of Beijing's pollution comes from sources outside of Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So the most they can do for the Olympics on their current course is improve it 40%, which is not good.
That's not going to happen.
I personally think that the air is better now than it was when we studied here.
Oh, marginally. That's good.
Yeah, it's better. And they miraculously met their blue sky target for the year at 245 days. We hit day 245 on the 31st of December.
Somehow I was able, I met this, a guy who's very high up at SEPA, the State Environmental Protection, China's the EPA, and I was asking him about, what the chances are of, improving it significantly. Like, it's not going to happen. And he blamed it all on the cars, or a lot of it on the cars. 1,000 new cars every day driving around. For me, at least right now, the cutoff is the Olympics. After the Olympics are over, I'm going to reevaluate whether I want to be here or not.
Okay.
I think that's the case for the vast majority of young expats here.
Mm-hmm.
People who haven't been sent over by their company, people who came here just to...
You're so close, there's no point in going home now.
There's a reevaluate your life after August 2008. Come September, decide, do I want to stay here as the skies turn gray again? And
things seem like they've changed in China. I remember when Jim Heffler and I first came in 2003, and we were visiting Hong Kong, and then we had an opportunity to go from Hong Kong into Shenzhen to go across the boundary. I was actually intimidated when I was getting processed. I mean, it just had that intensity of, this is a pretty heavy-duty military presence at the border. And it was okay when we got on the other side, but do you have any sense of...
It really depends on what aspect of it you look at.
Mm-hmm.
The foreign press has a lot more leeway to roam around and ask questions now, but at the same time they're cracking down on the domestic press because on one hand, you know, the foreign press can say whatever the heck they want to the rest of the world and it's not going to take the party out of power here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're still... I imagine there's going to be a pretty big cleanup before the Olympics of troublemakers, and they're going to... It's sad to a certain extent what people who don't know much about this place will come here and see during the Olympics, because it's certainly not going to be the real story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just over Christmas, when the Western world was all turned toward Christmas, they locked up a few journalists and dissidents. I imagine they'll just keep them under house arrest until the Olympics are passed. Like, a lot of things have improved, and some things have. Some things are getting worse.
But what I think a lot of people who don't live in China don't really realize is that, you know, the average Joe in China is not concerned about that stuff. They're not hearing about it, but when it comes to, like, internet censorship, they don't really care. I mean, they have a good job and they're making money and they're happy with the way things are going. They're having opportunities that they never would have thought they could have had. So I think, you know, in their minds, it's the system's not that broken. Comparing our program to the other programs that American college students were doing, ours was, we were exposed to a lot more of real China, I think. Those kids lived in a dorm, a really nice dorm. It was like a hotel, whereas if you were to stay at a dorm through the Dickinson program, it's a piece of crap.
It's a Chinese dorm.
Yeah.
I think I heard that story that, you know, your feet are freezing in the wintertime and...
Oh, no, they have
no mattress on your bed.
No mattress on your bed, yeah.
I flew over here. It was the first time I'd flown that long. And I was so excited to get to my bed and just lie down, and I, you know, jump onto my bed. But it's not just that. I guess it's mostly because of Gal Offshore, our on-site director.
You come over here and the on-site director doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
And you hate that when you come here. And it makes some kids miserable, but for the most part, I think you really learn to appreciate that. And realize
that's
that
how it happens.
You got here and there's someone willing to do what she has to do to you know, get you where you need to be and straighten your life out. But you've got to learn how to communicate your needs to her. You don't get to take it easy. That's very cool.
That is very cool.
Then she'll invite you out for dinner with some of her friends, so you get to meet some interesting people. We've gone to their parents' house. She really gives you a window into real Chinese life, which most students don't get. And living with families, you're getting a host family is also accomplishes that.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of programs don't offer that.